You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, our guest looks at where human rights issues stand in the new Trump administration.
First, the words body fat can stir up a lot of complex emotions when it's mentioned. Body fat holds a special place at the intersection of health, medicine, beauty, and aesthetics. Many people throughout their lifetime will embark on a journey to banish fat from their bodies, and weight loss is a $60 billion industry.
But our next guest says that body fat's bad reputation can be chalked up to its role in our health being misunderstood, and that we can coexist with fat, even lose it, if and when we understand it.
Sylvia Tara joins us now. She's a biochemist and the author of the book, The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. Sylvia, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, starting with this term body fat, it's not that simple. What exactly is body fat?
So body fat is much more than what we think it is. A lot of people see it as just a reserve of calories, as something to be gotten rid of at all costs. But in truth, body fat is actually an organ, so it's much like your skin. Even a piece of skin is considered a tissue, but skin in its totality is considered an organ. And body fat is the same. It actually releases critical hormones that our body depends on. And when people don't have enough fat or they have a genetic defect in the fat, they get a multitude of health problems. So we really need to understand our fat, why it's really there for all the reasons, and respect it and treat it as well and take care of it like you would your heart or your colon or lungs or any other organ.
Well, I think in our culture, there is sort of this holy grail of having a very low percentage of body fat, and that's these days is kind of the ideal. You're saying body fat can be good. It does serve these purposes. So how exactly should we be thinking about what body fat is good and helpful and healthy, and what body fat might not be so great for us?
Sure. So body fat, you know, at normal levels really does serve us well. You know, as I said, it's an organ. It releases a number of hormones that we depend on. In fact, our body fat is linked to a healthy reproductive system. When women get too low of a body fat, women with eating disorders say, they actually have trouble reproducing. Our brain size and brain health is also linked to a healthy amount of fat, as is our immune system and bone health. So fat is actually implicated in many, many body functions, and that is because of the hormones that it releases into our bloodstream that actually start interacting with other parts of our body as well. So, for example, one of those hormones is leptin. Leptin is released by fat cells, and leptin is released into our bloodstream, and it travels to our brain, where it signals satiation. It also has effect on our metabolism. So when we lose body fat, say by dieting or even by liposuction, we have less leptin. And when we have less leptin, we actually have a higher drive to eat. We're less satiated overall. Our metabolism also gets a little bit lower, and we get a little bit more obsessive with food. And in this interesting way, fat protects itself. So when we lose it, you get a little hungrier, your metabolism gets lower. It's as if your body's making this coordinated effort to put fat back on. And that is because fat is important for all the reasons we just talked about, because its effect on our reproduction, on our brain, our immune system. So although you might really want to lose fat, your body really doesn't. And it's just something to think about, you know, as you are dieting and trying to lose it, your body will fight that effort as much as it can. And it takes longer to lose fat than you might think. And it's a harder effort than you might think. In fact, people who have lost fat have to eat about 22% fewer calories than people who are at that natural weight to begin with. So say somebody's at 150 pounds naturally, never had to diet to get to that level. When you compare them to someone who was 170 pounds, but lost 20 pounds to get to 150, the person who's lost the 20 pounds to get to 150 actually has to eat about 22% fewer calories. And again, that's because fat through leptin will reduce your metabolism after you lose fat and have lower levels of leptin.
You know, first of all, it seems like in today's world, that's not fair. I mean, this is what we read about in The Biggest Loser Science. It was an article in The New York Times, I'm sure you saw it, about how some of the people on that show who had lost a lot of weight, they were not able to eat even what they were able to eat before to maintain a weight. They had to eat far below. So what is behind that mechanism? Is there anything that people can do about it?
Yeah, the real thing to do about it is that you just have to persist. You know, this is the way our body is. Our body values fat. When we start to lose it, it tries to protect it and get it back. And so if you really want to win on your diet, number one is you have to be aware of this. And this is one reason why weight regain is so common. People aren't aware of this. And when they go on a diet, they want to eat like their other thin friends are eating. And you know what? They might be able to eat more than you. And it's not even just leptin that's the reason for that. Genetics have a role in our weight gain. Some people gain weight much easier than others because of genetics. Gender plays a role. Even bacteria and viruses play a role, as does age and our hormone levels. So we're all really very individual. Your dieting history, how much you've gone up and down, you've affected your leptin levels. That effect of lower leptin can last for years. It's been studied up to 6 years and might even last longer. And all of those things have a role to play. So we can never really compare ourselves to someone else. You have to take your own history and your own body type into consideration. So number one thing that people can do is awareness, and hopefully the Secret Life of Fat is a start to real awareness on all the different reasons that we gain weight. It's not all just sloth and gluttony. The second big part of the solution really is persistence. You know, your fat is fighting to come back. It is making you hungrier. It is getting you a little bit more obsessive about food. fMRI studies show that when people have lost 10% of their weight or more, they're actually much more responsive to food, and their inhibitory centers, actually the activity diminishes. So they're more responsive and have less self-control. And so you're hungrier, you have less self-control, you're more obsessive, and you really have to fight that for years. And so you have to persist. Willpower becomes a part of it. I do have a whole chapter on the psychology of dieting, you know, how to persist, how to build up that strength. Willpower is like a muscle, and you have to build it up in steps so that you can really go through years of staying on a diet to maintain a low weight. And so, you know, awareness, persistence, and then there's some things you can just be smart about. You know, there are a number of hormones that that affect fat. Insulin is talked about an awful lot, but there's also growth hormone and testosterone, hormones that bust through fat, and they decline with age. But there are exercises, there are ways of eating that actually will help some of that fat-busting hormones increase again. So just being smarter about our fat, understanding it, and then taking those, you know, those steps, those kind of special steps that hopefully can help you manage it. But, you know, it's not easy, and I don't sugarcoat things in The Secret Life of Fat. This is a hard problem to grapple with.
We're talking to Sylvia Tara right now. She's a biochemist and the author of The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. And Sylvia, as part of this, that maybe we should stop being so obsessed with the amount of fat that we have. I mean, if you look at different ages, there have been times in this country where fat was seen as desirable and people tried to plump up and there was a fat man society for people who were really prosperous. Maybe the secret is just easing up and realizing that it's more a question of having a balanced mindset about body fat.
Yeah, and I think that's right. You know, fat was one time respected even in America. There was a time after the Civil War where there was poverty and destruction and food was hard to come by. And in that time, fat was really, it was cherished. There was the Fat Man's Club in the U.S. where men had to be fat enough to join. It was seen as prestige. There were columns in newspapers telling women how to gain weight, the vice columns. So it was quite the opposite of today. You know, it all turned around when people started gaining weight a little more easily, when food became more plentiful. And businesses got in, started selling solutions for how to lose weight, and there became this big echo chamber, and people got very self-conscious about their fat. It became a judgment. And we're still in that era a bit where fat is a judgment. And, you know, but if you really look at the science of fat and what it's important for, why we need it, there's a bigger range that's healthy than what people think. Obesity is not good. Visceral fat is not good, but nor is excessive leanness. And I discussed that quite a bit in The Secret Life of Fat. And so there are cases where people can even be fat but fit. I give the example of sumo wrestlers, and sumo wrestlers eat 5,000 calories a day. They're obese by any stretch of the imagination. Another trick that fat has, though, is that it releases another hormone called adiponectin, and adiponectin can clear triglycerides and cholesterol out of the blood and sequester it into fat where it belongs. Now, the key is that sumo wrestlers exercise 6 to 7 hours a day, and exercise promotes this release of adiponectin. And so they're actually clearing their blood of all these excess nutrients, all these excess lipids, and putting it into fat where it belongs. And so they tend to be metabolically healthy. The other thing that's important to know is not all fat is created equal. So we have visceral fat, which is that fat underneath our stomach wall, and that is the more dangerous fat that leads to heart disease and diabetes. There's also subcutaneous fat, that is the fat right under our skin, and that's the healthier deposit of fat. Sumo wrestlers actually have more subcutaneous fat. They don't have that much visceral fat, and therefore they are healthier than people who are just regular obese and have excess amounts of visceral fat. So you can be fat but fit if your fat is in the right places and you're also exercising and otherwise eating a healthy diet. What's interesting about sumo wrestlers is when they retire and they stop exercising, they do get visceral fat because they don't have as much adiponectin anymore, and their fat is now being stored not just underneath their skin but in their belly as well. They quickly become unhealthy. So, you know, it's important to know. You have to know, you know, what fat is. You have to understand it at the different levels. You have to be just about as clever as your fat is in order to be able to fight it back and keep it in check. But I do hope that The Secret Life of Fat gives people a more comprehensive understanding, and hopefully they'll even gain some respect for what their fat's doing underneath their skin that they never knew about.
Sylvia Tara is with us now. She's a biochemist and the author of the book we're talking about. It's called The Secret Life of Fat, the science behind the body's least understood organ and what it means for you.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about fat? What it is, how it works, maybe how to manage it so we have the better kinds, not so much of the bad stuff. What are your thoughts? What are your questions? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation about body fat, why we have it, how it works, and how we can maybe make peace with it. And Sylvia Tara joins us. She's a biochemist and the author of The Secret Life of Fat, the science behind the body's least understood organ and what it means for you.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how body fat works? Are you at war with your own fat, or have you made peace with it? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We have Ruth joining us in Altoona. Ruth, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm just calling because for the last year we've changed the way we eat. We were pretty careful anyway, but we really just began to eat differently. I kind of don't like the word diet because it really is about changing lifestyle and how you eat. But we've cut out sugar very, very significantly. But we eat fat. I mean, we eat good fats, healthy fats, not unhealthy ones. But we eat natural fat, you know, things like coconut oil or olive oil we use in our food, and we've lost a lot of weight. None of us are too thin, but we also, you know, are careful not to let that happen. But we've lost a lot of extra fat, and you know, I'm glad you just recently said the things about obesity that you said before you went to the other part of the program and then came back. Obesity is, there's just way too much of that in our country. And
Ruth, I'm going to get our guest in on that. Thank you for that call. And Ruth has changed the way she's eaten. Sounds like that was a family endeavor. Cut out sugar, does eat healthy fats. And Sylvia, you were talking about there being in the body, that is, good fat and less good fat. Is there any correlation between the kinds of fat that we eat and the kinds of fat that we have in the body?
So I think not as much. I think the types of fat we have in our body, you know, it's a resultant of a number of things, not just the type of fat we're eating, but the type of food we're eating and how much we're exercising as well. And so I think cutting out sugars, it's a great start, right, to start losing fat, and sugar is tied to insulin, as we know. And when we have too much sugar, it leads to insulin sensitivity, and our bodies don't react to it as well. And so lowering that certainly leads to better health overall. There's a number of ways, though, that you really can get your fat down if you have excess amounts of that. You know, you have to think of it, again, individually. So what works for one person isn't necessarily going to work for another. One diet doesn't fit all. There are people who really have trouble staying on a no-sugar diet. It's very restrictive for them, and they tend to go off, and they don't come back. And so really consider your own life, your own biology, and your own kind of psychology for what you need. a diet has to work for you biologically. You have to be able to lose weight on it. You have to see a result. At the same time, it has to work with your lifestyle. So for people who, you know, they like a little bit of sugar, they find that they keep breaking down on some of these restrictive diets. There's other things you can do. One diet that I like and I actually use is intermittent fasting, where you just restrict the time of eating to certain hours of the day. You make sure you get about a 16-hour fast in your day. And you have a lot more latitude on what you eat when you do that. I'm one of these people who I really like a little bit of sugar every now and then. And so those kind of Atkins diets, very restrictive diets, I end up not staying on it for long. So just be tuned to yourself, to your biology, what are you responding to, and psychologically, what can you stay on for years? Because it will be a lifestyle change. It's not something you can just go on and off if you want to lose weight.
Why does a 16-hour fast work?
So when you extend the overnight fast, the thought is that you extend the release of growth hormone. Our growth hormone is actually a great fat buster, but it declines as we age. Growth hormone actually peaks in its release at night. And so if you stop, and when we eat, we actually mitigate the levels of growth hormone in our blood. And so the thought is if you fast a little bit before you go to sleep, you know, wait a little bit before you have breakfast, you're actually maintaining that level of growth hormone in your blood, which is a great fat buster. Also, when you have some periods of hunger, you release a hormone called ghrelin, which is from the stomach, and it actually helps promote the release of growth hormone as well. And so, you know, don't hate your hunger pangs too much. They actually might be leading to more, you know, growth hormone, a little bit more fat loss. And so, you know, it's not that hard to do if you stop eating, say, at 6 o'clock at night and then don't eat again until about 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock the next day. You get that 16-hour fast in. And time restrictive eating has also been shown to decrease appetite. So there's something about just restricting eating to certain hours and that long stretch of hunger that your body starts to adjust to that and stops craving and wanting food all the time as well. So a number of benefits for it. But again, it's not for everybody. You know, intermittent fasting is not easy, especially if you have a life where you have to eat, you know, socially quite a bit. There's a number of diets out there, and I would just urge people to know that there's other solutions. Be smart about how you tailor your diet. And once you understand fat and metabolism at a deeper level, you actually can take any diet and modify it to make it work for you. And I'm hoping that some of the research I've done helps people do that.
Let's take another call. We've got Peg joining us in Rice Lake. Peg, hi.
Hi there.
What would you like to ask?
What about the body fat that's stored under the skin, which begins to decrease with old age? Is there any way to restore that fat or to keep it?
Okay, Peg, thanks for that. Sylvia.
That's a very interesting question. We do lose a subcutaneous fat as we age. And so fat actually has a trajectory in our life. We have good amounts of it as a baby, of course. We gain it as we go towards puberty. And then towards middle ages, we gain more because our hormones are declining. And then oddly, as we start to age into the 70s and beyond, our fat cells don't hold as much fat anymore. And that's just because they're weakening. They're not as strong as they used to. And when they don't hold as much fat, you actually get more lipids floating around in your blood, more fat, you know, depositing in other places. And so can you increase the amount of subcutaneous fat? Can you make fat cells stronger, really, in old age? I don't know if there's a way to do that right now. I don't believe there is. I do think that continuing to exercise into your upper years is a great benefit. And that, you know, again, there's certain exercises, especially strength-building exercise, you know, running for long bits as well. If you can run 3 miles a day or so, it releases more growth hormone again. It helps release testosterone a little bit more, which helps you build lean tissues as well, helps your metabolism stay up, and actually, you know, can help you stay a little bit more youthful longer. And so the thing to be aware of in old age is that, or older years, I should say, is that because we're not storing fat quite as well as we used to, you know, also watch what you eat quite a bit. Don't have a lot of excess lipids and sugars and things like that. Try to eat healthier because maintaining good health in older years, upper years, is actually quite, it's more of a challenge than it is, obviously, when you're in your 20s and you have your full array of hormones and lean tissue to work with.
Thanks a lot for that call, Peg. And looking down the road, Sylvia, what is the cutting edge of body fat research? Of course, I think a lot of people would just like a pill that you pop and poof, it's a lot easier to lose weight and still be healthy at the same time. What are researchers looking at?
There's so many interesting things on the horizon. I mean, one is leptin replacement. for dieters. You know, so like we talked about, when we lose fat, we lose leptin. It makes us hungrier when we have lower leptin or have a slower metabolism, and that effect lasts for years. One thing that's been researched is injecting some leptin back into people after they've lost some weight, and they find that that actually helps improve appetite. They're not seeking food as much. Also, the metabolism's a little higher, so they don't have to have that caloric penalty after you eat. It's still in research stages, probably not available for at least another decade if it ever does become available. You know, secondly, brown fat is being looked at. So brown fat is different than white fat. White fat is the fat we want to lose. Brown fat, instead of hoarding calories, actually burns calories. And so injecting brown fat into white fat is being looked at as a way possibly to lose weight later. You know, but another, I think, more practical and maybe a more imminent solution to this is going to be the individualization of diets. Some research coming out of Weizmann Institute in Israel actually shows that people react differently to foods. And so some people can eat something like chocolate or have some alcohol. They don't really get blood sugar spikes from some of these things that you would assume is going to increase blood sugar. There are other people who can't do that. They can just have, you know, a single chocolate chip and get this big blood sugar spike. And so we all respond a little bit differently with genetics, too. You know, we have different penchants for putting on weight. And so can you individualize a diet per person? And that's being looked at as well with different algorithms, people taking a genetic test, people testing their blood, you know, quite constantly to see what effect it's having, their body is having to foods. And so I think it's moving in that direction where we're learning not everyone is the same. Some people get away with eating massive amounts of calories and they're thin. Other people can, you know, eat 1,000 calories a day and still have a weight problem. And you really have to understand all those elements, you know, and tailor a diet that works for you. So exciting things out on the horizon. Some are quite far. Some are a little closer if you're really diligent about what mm-hmm. you're eating and you understand fat.
Well, Sylvia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Sylvia Tara is a biochemist and the author of the book, The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. She joined us to talk about fat and why it's more complex than you think. And you can let us know your comments about this over on the Central Time Facebook page.